Hello, friends, and welcome back to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today. During the first hour, we had two wonderful artists, Kana and Kaho from Los Angeles, who are both light workers who use their voice, music, and artistic abilities to raise consciousness and make this planet a much better and happier world. During the second hour, starting at about 3:15 Pacific Standard Time, I'll be interviewing the wonderful Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Minister of Defense. He'll be coming to us live from beautiful Toronto, Canada. But before we go to Paul in Toronto, I want to bring on my good friend Carolyn White, who's been helping me plan and organize this wonderful conference I'm having next month in Olympia called the Galactic Wisdom Conference, which will be held on March 10, 11, and 12. Carolyn, are you there?
I'm here. Good afternoon to you, Ted, and all your wonderful listeners out there. I'm here, and I'm having just a beautiful, wonderful day. Hope you all are, too.
Good. One thing, Carolyn, I want to bring up to you, and I want to share with my listeners, is that ever since we had our last conference last June, I want to thank my friends in the Galactic Alliance because I see their ships every night around the conference site area. How about you, Carolyn? Do you see the ships as well?
Yes, we have, and I've felt their presence there. So it's a blessing. It's a blessing to have such positive energy helping us through all of the different changes and things that we're going through right now on this earth. So it is. It's a wonderful blessing to have them there with us. And they've been there since the last conference was last June.
June, absolutely. Absolutely. I was at your place a couple of months ago, I remember. And we were, remember the time, it was last summer, where we were looking out at the sky. And I sent a message to them to give me a sign they were there. So they turned off their lights.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And then they turned them back on again after that.
And the old handshake, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right. Now, for those skeptics out there who might say, oh, they're just making this up, or what they really saw was the stars. Well, stars don't turn off their lights and then turn them back on again. Spacecraft
and also,
do.
Stars
though.
Don't move. Stars move in a very regular motion. Actually, it's us on Earth that's moving, whereas the craft will appear and then disappear, and then there'll be someplace entirely different in that area. So stars just don't move like that.
Right. Exactly. One of the purpose of the conference and my radio show and television shows is to raise consciousness and make this planet a better place, and to that end, one of the people who I really like, he's one of my favorite folks, is Dr. Gerald Pollack. He's a famous water scientist from the University of Washington. He'll be there on Saturday morning from 9 to 10:30 in the morning. And one of the things that I like about Professor Pollack is that in his water research, he goes into what I call the spiritual qualities of water, his fourth phase of water.
Yes.
And water itself has memory. One of my guests last year on my show, named Matthias DiStefano, said that he has memories of Atlantis, where the Atlanteans would actually use water as a memory device to store information.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that Professor Pollack has discovered, too. It's fascinating, the kind of research he does, because he's not all hard science, so-called hard sciences. He goes into these other dimensions. He's on the cutting edge of water research for the world.
Yes, and that's one of the things, even if you think about it, the concept of homeopathics, which I've been using now for, well over 40 years with much success, mm-hmm. that they actually use that property of water memory because they have a bit of the what the toxin that helps your body immune system to overcome what's happening inside of your body, and it is so diluted that within the water, and the water still maintains that memory. So when you ingest it, it helps your body restore its vibration, it restores its vitality. So there's just so much that we are just at the edge of discovering about water. Really, it's rediscovery, because mm-hmm. I believe that civilizations in the past, Atlantis, Lemuria, have used this technology of water. It's just that it's been suppressed, and we have some wonderful researchers like Gerald Pollack, and of course Dr. Masaru Emoto, who discovered these properties of water, that consciousness even affects water and affects how it's formed and its crystalline formation. So there's so many things that we're just learning now, and we're going to be discovering those as part of the conference this March.
Absolutely. There's so much we don't know. You know, to look at a glass of water, two glasses of water, and think they're all the same, and they're not. They're not.
Well, and I think this is one of the things, too, that I've learned over the years, and it's taught Reiki, it's taught quantum touch, that when you have a glass of water, mm-hmm. is before you drink it, is hold it in your hands and send it good thoughts, positive thoughts.
Right.
Even do the water prayer for the water.
Right.
And ask the water to refresh your body and to do as much as it can to help rejuvenate and make your body more vibrant.
Right.
And so I think that's so important. It's just like saying blessing over food is thank the water for being there. Thank the water for helping to nourish your body and keep your cells lubricated. So that's important. So tonight, when you go home and have your supper, you have your glass of water there before you put it to your lips.
Mm-hmm.
Just hold your hands over or hold the water in your hands and say, thank you, water.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful. You could say, thank you, water. We're sorry. Please forgive us. And we love you. That's the whole, the special prayer that Dr. Moto used to say. And you'll transmit a lot of beautiful energy to the water.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. So we're going to be discussing all kinds of things from an energetic point of view about water, vibrational energy. Dr. Yoshi, who's one of the world-renowned Hado healers, is going to be there. And also, I don't know if you've mentioned to your audience, we're really privileged because the day after the conference, which would be starting the 14th and 15th, Dr. Yoshi, besides doing Hado sessions, is also going to be doing personalized, very small classes, presentations, and lectures talking about what the Hado machines are, vibration, and how that can be healing. So we're so fortunate to have that offered that you're having at the right after the conference. So any of those out there that want to take advantage of that, an opportunity that you'd have to go to Japan for participate in and drink in this knowledge and get into the vibrations of what's happening with Hado healing.
Absolutely. Well, Carolyn, you're always so much fun to have on the show, and you always bring up some wonderful, wonderful points. I also want to say, too, that we have some special guests at the conference, including Tony Rodriguez, who lived on 20 Mars. He says he lived for 20 years on Mars and Ceres in the Secret Space Program. Alfred Weber, who's a famous Canadian lawyer and the former head of Jimmy Carter's UFO Disclosure Commission. Simon Parks, a famous English extraterrestrial contactee. Scott Lemriel, who's been in constant contact with the Galactic Alliance for the past 55 years. Billy Woodard and Zora, the Hollow Earth, he's from the Hollow Earth and the former base commander of Area 51. That's kind of the UFO group. And then we've got healers like yourself. You're a healer, Carolyn. Also, Robbie
yes.
Holtz, who's a fantastic, she learned her healing techniques from the Australian Aborigines, which I thought was really incredible. And then we've got Emma Louise Hansen. She's a contactee from the Andromeda Galaxy on the New Earth. She's coming to us flying in from Norway. We also have
Jim Mars.
Yeah, right, exactly. Jim Mars, the very famous American journalist, who's very honest. I like his writing. He's written some incredible books. So it'll be a concentration of a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge. And I just can't wait. I think it's going to be really really incredible. The first day is free on Friday, March 10th. So just come, even if you're broke, just come up and introduce yourself, and you can meet our presenters. Saturday and Sunday, it's $197. And then we've got also the Hutto sessions on March 14th and 15th as well. And for more information, just go to galacticwisdomconference.com. If you have any questions, just send me an email to outoftheisworld1150@gmail.com. Or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793. And with that, I'm going to go off now. And I'd like to bring on Paul Haley. But before we do, thank you so much, Carolyn, for coming on today. It's so good to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much, Ted, and to all your listeners. And we'll see you all there at the Galactic Wisdom Conference. So that's www.galacticwisdomconference.com, and all the information there is on the website. And even if you're on Facebook, just look up Galactic Wisdom Conference, and we have information on there. So thank you very much, Ted. Your listeners, have a wonderful, beautiful day, and remember, say your water prayer.
Okay. All right, Carolyn. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Thanks. Take care. And with that, I'd like to go to my wonderful person, Paul Hellier in Toronto, Canada. Paul, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks, Ted. And yourself?
Oh, fine. Just fine. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Seattle, and we really cherish these sunny days, Paul. As you know, we get a lot of rain out here, like in Vancouver. And so when it's sunny, it's always a cause for celebration.
I realized that we had a sunny day today, too, and everyone was rejoicing.
Oh, how wonderful! How wonderful! Well, you've had an amazing career, Paul. For those of you listening today who aren't familiar with Paul's background, he's the former Canadian Minister of Defense. He holds one of the longest and most varied political careers in Canada's history. He was first elected as a Liberal in 1949, a federal election in the District of Davenport. And he was the youngest person ever elected to that point, in the Canadian House of Commons. You served as a brief stint as parliamentary assistant to the Minister of National Defense, made a good impression. You were then named Associate Minister of National Defense in the cabinet of Prime Minister Louise St. Laurent. He lost his seat when the government lost the 1957 election. But you did know President John F. Kennedy when you were in the government in the early 60s. And I think, in my opinion, Paul, you're one of the most honest and ethical people I've ever met. You've written books on what you call the money mafia. And your website is www.paulhelierweb.com. And I'm so happy you could come on today, Paul.
Well, thank you for your kind words. And it's a pleasure to be back with you. And I'm sorry I can't go to your show in March, but things are so busy up here and so much going on, I just have to stay close to home for the next few weeks.
Oh, Paul, that's perfectly fine. I'll be having another conference on March 9, 10, and 11 next year, and at that conference, I'd love to fly you out. We talked about that before. If you can make it, you're welcome to come and come in person to my conference next year in 2018.
Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Now, you've written a book called The Money Mafia, and in the description about the book, you argue that the existence of exotic energy sources should be developed to replace fossil fuels, and an immediate end to fracking or offshore drilling for oil. You blast government secrecy and more than 65 years of lies and disinformation. And you also are requesting full disclosure of what our governments know around the world about visitors from other realms and their technology and the extent of their collaboration. That's an amazing statement, Paul. And I've read your book, and it's just amazing all the points that you brought up in your book.
Well, there are a lot of points, and there are some very important ones, and the most urgent right at the moment I think, is the banking and financial system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the one we have is really beyond insanity. I don't know if it's possible to be beyond insanity or not.
Beyond insanity,
but if there isn't, why, let's invent the idea that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what our banking and financial system is today and has been for quite a while, and particularly so the last few decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somehow, politicians, and there are some smart ones, and there are a lot of dedicated ones, but there's some that don't quite realize what they're doing sometimes. And they have handed over to private individuals a monopoly to create money.
Mm.
And this is despite the fact that the people own the patents.
Mm.
But they don't use them. They can't use them in the case of the United States because
right.
a little over 103 or 4 years ago or so, the Congress gave away your right to create your own money. That was probably one of the biggest mistakes that has been made by any Congress in the history of the United States of America.
I couldn't agree with you more, Paul.
And, you know, it's a problem that still has to be faced.
Right.
Because the private individuals who form the banks, and through them the banking cartel, mm-hmm. they create all of their money as debt.
Mm-hmm.
And worse than that, it's debt that has to be repaid with interest. But no one creates any money with which to pay either the principal or interest. So what do?
Right.
It's a dead end. And because money is the gasoline for economic engines, you have to go and borrow more.
Mm-hmm.
And so a larger share of income of your income keeps going to the lenders.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have more debt in the world today than there has ever been at any time in history.
Wow.
And more debt than there is money.
Hmm. Wow.
So we've got a big problem there. And ultimately, we lose our assets because these people that lend us money, they want it back. And if they don't get it, why, they just say, well, we'll take your car or your skyscraper or your country or whatever.
Sure.
And you can see how they've been buying up assets in some countries in Europe, like Italy, Greece, and mm-hmm. Portugal, and so on. And now the new targets, we are told, are the United States and Canada.
Mm.
So we should beware. You know, I have an interesting statistic here that I don't know if you're listeners have heard it before or not, but 3 years ago, 88 families owned half of the wealth in the whole world.
Wow.
The next year was 80.
Wow.
And this year it is 62.
Oh, wow.
62 families own half of all the world's wealth.
Wow.
You know, I can't even get my head around that.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
When I'm speaking, I start and say, well, you know, look at it this way, that you start in the Pacific side with Beijing and Peking and Tokyo, and mm-hmm. then you come across the water, and you've got Los Angeles and San Francisco and Vancouver. And
mm-hmm.
you go on across, and you get Philadelphia and New York and Toronto, and then you hop the pond, and you get London, Manchester, and,
mm-hmm.
and there's the Paris and Bonn, and on it goes and on it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say every second one of those cities is owned lock, stock, and barrel by 62 families.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
That you could put on one suburban street.
Wow, amazing.
So, and the reason that is, the system and its leverage, and the fact that they're allowed, in effect, to buy assets for 5 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you and I could buy assets for 5 cents on the dollar, we could accumulate quite a pretty penny, too.
That's true.
But we don't have bank charter, so we can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, this business of leverage, I don't know if you've maybe it's worth taking a minute or two, but
mm-hmm.
you go back about 300 years
mm-hmm.
to the time when the King of England was ran out of money. He was fighting France, King William.
Okay.
And so he had to get some money, but he had, his credit wasn't good, so mm-hmm. he got Parliament to pass a bill establishing the Bank of England.
Mm.
And the rich people of London put in 1,200 pounds of gold and silver,
mm-hmm.
and lent it all to the king at 8%, which is a pretty high interest rate for government-guaranteed loan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then to show his appreciation, the king said, now you can go and print, P-R-I-N-T, mm-hmm. 1,200,000 pounds in banknotes and lend them to your rich friends.
Wow.
So in effect, so the king said, you can lend the same money twice, once to me and once to your rich friends.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And over the years, through the avarice of banks and the collusion or cooperation of politicians,
mm-hmm.
that ratio has gone up and up and up.
Wow.
In the early days of the 20th century, for example, in the United States, federally chartered banks had to have 25% gold reserves.
Mm.
So that means they could lend the same money four times.
Wow.
In Canada, when I was young,
mm-hmm.
the banks had to have 8% cash, which meant they could lend the same money 12 and a half times.
Wow, amazing.
Well, then along comes Milton Friedman and says, well, let's deregulate the banks and let them more or less run their own show.
Right.
And they changed the system from cash reserves, ultimately, to what they called capital adequacy,
mm-hmm.
which should have been called capital inadequacy.
Hmm.
And the ratio that they were allowed is 20 to 1. Just
wow.
before some regulations were passed, the ratios wow. in the U.S. got up to 30 and 35.
Wow.
So they could lend the same money 30 or 35 times.
Wow.
And get away with it in some cases, although the odd one went bankrupt. So this is how some people have become so incredibly wealthy.
Wow.
You know, and you just can't imagine, as I said, I can't get my head around it. But mm-hmm. I know that it's not good for the world.
Right.
It's not good for anybody, even the people that have all that wealth, because I'm sure it's a problem in many ways. And something has to be done. And the only acceptable solution that I and some of my colleagues have been able to come up with is a massive injection of government-created debt-free money.
Mm.
Now, that sounds interesting in the sense that it would be money that is created by the government and spent into circulation to do all of the things that aren't being done because there isn't enough money in the system at the present time.
Sure.
And, of course, in the States, that means repealing the Federal Reserve Act.
Right, right.
And if the president's looking for a real challenge, that would be a good one.
Well, I think President Trump said something about that in January. I'm not sure. I should probably follow it more closely. But the last president who tried to do that was John F. Kennedy, I believe, in 62 or 63. Didn't he issue U.S. notes?
He issued some U.S. Silver certificates, yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
And then he was assassinated.
Something really big has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. should have a Bank of the U.S., which is owned 100% by the people. And then you could do miracles. You could accomplish miracles because you could create money
mm-hmm.
and spend it into circulation, spend it 50-50 between the federal government and the states.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand from reading your papers, that the states were, you know, had a drought. And they didn't have enough money for teachers, and they didn't have enough money for all sorts of things.
Right.
The same as our provinces up here.
Right.
And you could solve that problem, and then at the same time reduce the leverage of the banks because you have to recreate cash reserves as you created the money,
mm-hmm.
so that it wouldn't be inflationary. You make the banks keep money in reserve against their deposits again, the way mm-hmm. they used to, and reduce their leverage from 20 to 1 to 2 to 1, which is what we're proposing.
Wonderful.
And then they'd have to pay 50% on the on the dollar to buy their assets and not just 5 cents. So it'll slow them down a little bit for a little while. Anyway, and it would just revolutionize the world, mm-hmm. because it would reestablish a little democracy,
mm-hmm.
because today there is none. Because the cabal, as I call it, and as they call it in my books,
sure,
and specifically the banking cartel, have been running the world.
That's true.
And they decide what is going to happen, whether unemployment is going to be high or low, and interest rates are going to be high and low, and so on. And it's too much power to be in the hands of people who are unelected and not responsible
to
the people.
I have to share this quote with you, Paul, if hope you don't mind. But wasn't Baron von Rothschild who said back in the 18th century that if once private banks control the money supply of a country, they don't care what kind of government it has because it doesn't matter after that point?
Yes, I think you've got the quote almost exact. He said something like, give me the right to create a nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws.
That's it. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's true, because then they don't give a darn who's elected, whether it's Republican or Democratic or independent or who.
Right.
Because they still are pulling the strings.
Right, exactly.
Making the dough, excuse my slang language.
Yeah, yeah.
So instead of fooling around with the system we've got, and mm-hmm. this has been the case for just about every country since the G20 was formed.
Right.
You know, when they were in Toronto, they spent nearly all their time trying to rescue the system.
Right.
For the benefit of the banks.
Well, I know that when we had our financial problems back in 2008 here in the United States, there were bailout monies given to the banks, but none of it trickled down. They helped the banks out much, and a lot of the money I've heard actually went to China and investments, but very little of it was actually shared with the American citizens here in this country.
Yeah, and worse, I think it was Ron Paul who finally got the Fed partly at least audited.
Right.
And in my book, I list, I think it was $16 trillion that they created for their friends in the banking industry and in commerce. $16
trillion. Wow.
Well, you know, even for the United States, that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. Mm-hmm.
And they were, in effect, diluting the people's money, the people's currency.
Right.
Exactly. And as you just said, that money didn't go to the people. Very, very little of it was lent into circulation.
Mm-hmm.
The banks used it to start buying assets.
Right.
Oil fields and ports and things like that.
Sure, sure.
And they were borrowing it at zero interest or close to zero interest all the time. And they were spending quite a lot in the stock market, too, buying stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing up the price a little bit, but they were getting, you know, 4 or 5%, 10% return on the stocks against the zero cost.
Right.
And you don't do too badly with that kind of an arrangement either, do you?
No. And that's led, I think, Paul, to this concentration of wealth in just 62 families. And also in investments like we have today in Standing Rock in North Dakota, which a lot of people are protesting against.
Again?
Oh, we have these banking practices have led to the concentration of wealth in 62 families,
yeah.
worldwide, and also to ill-fated investments like the oil pipeline that goes through Standing Rock in North Dakota, which many
yeah.
people have been protesting against.
Well, you know, that's another thing at the beginning, you mentioned the zero-point energy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking about putting money into circulation, which is the gasoline of any economy.
Mm-hmm.
And if they created all of that money, probably about 10 or 12 or 15 trillion over, say, 7 years,
mm-hmm.
you could employ a lot of people right across the spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
Not just in infrastructure, but in the arts and in medicine and education and
absolutely
right across the whole spectrum,
mm-hmm.
which would be good. But then there still isn't enough to achieve the kind of full employment that the president has been hinting at.
Right.
And that's where your zero-point energy comes into it.
Oh, interesting.
Because if he were to issue a presidential order to make the technology for zero-point energy available readily without, you know, without big royalties,
right.
or with no royalty at all, or
right.
because a lot of people's money in it, invested in it,
mm-hmm.
Then you could create millions of jobs, both in the United States and around the world, as you do the next big transformation, like the last one was from buggies to cars.
Right.
This one, we would still have cars for a while at least,
mm-hmm.
but they would have to have zero-point engines. And in my book, as you probably recall,
mm-hmm.
I say that we should do that in 7 years.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
And people say, well, yeah, that's impossible. And I say, not to be contrary, but I say it is possible because I've been around long enough to mm-hmm. know what we did in World War II.
Sure.
When we converted all of those plants for cars and fridges
mm-hmm.
and washing machines
mm-hmm.
into armaments.
Right.
Plant.
Right.
In the war.
Right.
Well, you just do the reverse now. And you convert the armaments plants and the war-making apparatus into plants to build zero-point engines for every car, truck, tractor, boat,
mm-hmm.
airplane, and home in the whole world.
Right.
That would be the aim. And it could be done.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm not holding my breath that it's going to be, but it could be.
Well,
and if we had some real leadership in the G20, which is what we're looking for,
right?
They could make that the aim rather than saying, you know, we've got to have bigger armaments
mm-hmm.
because there are no real enemies. During the election, I remember the sort of debate about whether the greatness of the United States,
mm-hmm.
although certainly they have the most powerful military machine in the history of the world.
Right.
And nobody to take them on for size.
Right.
So they could certainly cut the expenditures for armaments and spend it to do this, I think, essential job of saving the planet and at the same time employing people and giving them more control over their own lives. And there are a few people that still protest that this is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they've even adopted a sort of a politically correct name for global warming now, which is climate change.
Oh, okay. Funny.
So you don't dare say global warming.
Mm.
You have to say climate change. And then, of course, you and I know if you start going around the world and looking at all of the hurricanes and
oh, yeah.
all of the snow in places where it's never snowed before and
sure.
all the rain and the people losing their houses and mudslides
yeah.
and all
oh,
this
yeah.
sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You say something is not right here.
Well, Paul, I want to share something very special with you. And when I was in Los Angeles at a conference a week ago, I met with a friend of mine named Craig Campobasso, and he did a film a couple of years ago. I believe it was either 2013 or 2014 called Stranger at the Pentagon. And if you have a chance, I urge you to listen to the film. It's a fascinating film about a guy named Valiant Thor, who was, he was human, but he was an angelically created being from the Galactic Alliance, who came and met with President Eisenhower in 1957. And he offered President... Are you familiar with the story, by the way?
Yeah, I know the story.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, for my listeners, just real brief.
Well, please go on. Just remind me, too. His name was Thor.
Mm-hmm, Valiant Thor. And
what was his first name?
Valiant, V-A-L-L.
Yeah, that's right, Valiant.
Valiant Thor, yeah.
That's what I remember.
And I talked to, just briefly, he offered basically zero-point energy, free energy, to the Eisenhower administration, and also offered to get rid of all diseases on this planet. Nixon and Eisenhower were both in favor of it, but the Joint Chiefs here in the United States were against it because they wanted weapons. And also, Nixon had reservations about it because he had many friends in the pharmaceutical industries in the American Medical Association, and he was afraid that they would lose their jobs and they'd have to work at hamburger stands if everybody became healthy. And so
yeah, they'd have to make nice parks with lots of flowers in them. And hold the hands of the old people like me and make sure they don't fall over.
Yeah, exactly. So I know we can do it. And one thing I want to say, too, Craig is working on a new film on this. It's going to be released in April. So I'll let you know.
Is it going to be the story of Thor's, what was it, 4 years he had there?
Yeah, it's going to be a follow-up on that, absolutely. He told me about it in Los Angeles last week, so... he's coming on my show in a couple of months to talk about the film, but I'll send you the link once I get it. But I know you're right. We can do it in 7 years, and 7 years is very interesting because 7 days of the week, there's something called in the spiritual world the seven cycle.
Right.
7 days of the week, 7 years. Sometimes in relationships, you might be in a relationship for 7 years, 7, 14, 21, 28, 35 years. Sometimes you do a particular profession for 7, 14, 21, 28 years. That comes in 7 year cycles. And I know you're right. When you said that 7 years, I know it could be done.
Well, the thing is trying to persuade somebody that that's what we should be doing.
Right.
Well, I think, you know, the world's crying out for leadership.
Yeah.
And if we can just sort of pass along a few hints to the president as to what he could do that would fulfill his promises and his dreams, that would help him and help us too, help the people.
Paul, I have an idea. Have you sent your book, Money Mafia, to President Trump?
No, I haven't, because I tried to do that with President Obama, and the gatekeepers never let it through.
Oh, okay, that's too bad.
I sent the earlier book, too, Light at the End of the Tunnel. Was it, a survival plan for the human species.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two latest books. The Light at the End of the Tunnel was supposed to be the last book, but then there were so many things happened in 4 years that I decided to write The Money Mafia, The World in Crisis.
Wow.
Because the other one, which is still relevant and is actually selling still quite well,
mm-hmm.
Was... it didn't have the latest information that I was aware of. So I decided that I'd better take one more crack at it. And I'm glad I did, because the Money Mafia is up to date now in many respects as the day it was written.
Well, I want to say this, that well, I have a large audience worldwide with over 130,000 listeners in over 60 countries. So I want you to give out your website now. And I'm sure there's a government official out there somewhere who's listening to this program and who's interested in your book. And if you could give out your website, they could order it and find out more about it. And I urge them to read it, too, because you've got some wonderful ideas in your book, things that could really help.
Sure, they get it from my website. They can get it from Amazon. And Light at the End of the Tunnel is they could get from my website or from Author House.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other book that I'm mentioning starting now.
Okay.
It's called A Miracle in Waiting, Economics That Makes Sense. And there's so many things happening, like the BRIC countries
right.
planning to perhaps issue a new currency that's backed by gold.
Right.
And putting forth an alternative to the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. And all of this... there are a lot of relevant things in there, including, you know, getting rid of the IMF and you know, a lot of important things related to economics,
mm-hmm.
which isn't everybody's bag.
Right.
But I think it's worth mentioning, because if people want a little more substance than there is in the other two books,
right.
especially of where Milton Friedman went wrong,
right.
misled the economic world, and the rest of us with them. It has a lot of information in that, and it can be obtained from Author House or from Amazon, either one.
I want to give out your website for my listeners around the world who like more information about your wonderful work, Paul. It's www.paulhellierweb.com, and that's spelled PAULHELLYERWEB, as in boy, .com. What I like about you, several things I really like about you, Paul. First off, you're honest and ethical. And also, too, these books are very easy to read and understand. You boil down economics so that anybody can almost anybody reading the book can understand and speak in layman's terms to get some good answers on how things can be fixed.
Well, thank you for that, and I try to do that
mm-hmm.
because the things that are most important in economics are not taught in school.
Mm.
The fundamentals of money and banking
mm-hmm.
are not taught in school nor in economic schools.
Mm.
I think there's one exception in the United States, which is the University of Kansas in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
I may not have exactly right, but I think that's one where they've got it and where they are singing the same song
right.
and trying to get governments to exercise their powers and providing debt-free money to people, which is their right. So the books are designed for people who are not experts.
Right.
And I hope that quite a few will take a look and see if they don't think or agree that there's a better way, because I'm convinced that there is a better way.
One of my degrees, you're absolutely right about economic schools not teaching anything about the banking system, because I went to one of my degrees is from Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, and I have a degree in development studies, and it's an international economics degree, and they had no courses on that. I don't know what they're like now, but that was back in the 70s. They had no courses at all on things that you talk about.
Well, you know, an interesting thing, I saw a letter that was sent out from the Office of the Minister of Finance in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of months ago. And it said point blank that using the Bank of Canada would be inflationary.
Really?
Well, that isn't true.
Right. Yeah.
And we did it for 35 years. We have a precedent. And I talk about the precedent in the Money Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it for 35 years, and it worked beautifully.
Wow.
We had full employment. We came from an agrarian society
right.
To an industrialized society during the war.
Mm-hmm.
They helped the Bank of Canada created money to help the government of Canada with the war effort.
Right.
And then after the war effort with all of our infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
including the St. Lawrence Seaway, which both of our countries use.
Sure.
And the Trans-Canada Highway and the Dew Line, which both of our countries used, it was as a distant early warning line. It was a line of radars,
mm-hmm.
a huge radars that went all the way around the outside periphery of the continent.
Wow.
But especially in the north, and mm-hmm. Canada paid for them
mm-hmm.
as part of our contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And that was financed without borrowing and without going into any significant debt.
Wow.
And projects right across the country of all kinds.
Wow.
Federal, provincial, municipal.
Mm-hmm.
And then helped to lay the foundation of our social security system, which in the 1970s and so on was one of the most advanced.
Wow.
And all of this done without getting the country in hock.
Right. Amazing.
Well, then our Bank of Canada made the biggest mistake it's made.
Mm-hmm.
It started taking its orders from the Bank for International Settlements in Switzerland.
Ah.
And forgot about its shareholders,
mm-hmm.
who was the Canadian people.
Right.
And they started borrowing in the market instead of helping their shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years from 74 from 74 to 2014-15,
mm-hmm.
we had to borrow and pay interest on enough money that it cost us $1.17 trillion in interest alone.
Wow.
And you relate that to American terms, you're talking about, $14 or $15 trillion.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Wow.
And all of it unnecessary.
Right.
Simply because they got caught up in this idea of some, well, it was the Wizard of Oz, I guess, Ella Brown used to say. Somebody behind the curtain who knew all of the things, who knew, had all the knowledge.
Right.
It was just the opposite. They were there to manipulate the world for their own benefit. That's what it was all about. And to get that monopoly to create money that I was talking about earlier.
Wow.
And it was a sad, sad day for us. And we're trying to get that reversed, but we have a government. We've had two governments in a row, one conservative, one liberal.
Right.
That doesn't understand because they weren't around. They don't know their history.
Right.
And they don't understand what the situation really is.
Well, Paul, I have a lot of listeners in Canada, beautiful country, and how can we be of service to you and your efforts? I know, remember that you said that next month in March, you're having the budget debates up in Canada. How can we be of service to help you and your efforts?
Well, the biggest way they could help right now is to let the Prime Minister know
Prime Minister Trudeau.
We don't want our government to put the CETA, Canada-European Trade Agreement, into effect.
Okay.
It's being debated by Parliament right now.
Okay.
The House of Commons has passed it.
Oh, no.
It's now before the Senate, but they're adjourning for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And what they should do is hear evidence from all of the organizations that are opposed to it.
Okay.
And drop it, because what it does, these trade agreements, which the President of the United States is against, have been promoted by the people in the United States who were in favor of a new world order, which in effect was a world government unelected by the people. And so these trade agreements are not trade agreements. They are agreements to transfer power from the people to the banking cartel and the transnational corporation.
I couldn't agree with you more, Paul. You hit it right on the head, and you said it all in less than 10 words.
And it's a tragedy because, you know, in both countries you had people dying in two world wars for freedom.
Right.
Freedom to do what? To decide what you want to do and what is best for you.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, right from the beginning, they were cheating because they called them free trade agreements.
Right.
And they weren't.
Right.
We almost had free trade before we even had the agreement with the U.S.
Right, right.
But then somebody stuck in this thing of dispute settlements, which allows corporations, including banks, to sue countries who make laws in their own interest. But which affect their profits or potential profits.
Wow.
So they are really, they're insidious.
Wow, amazing.
They are really, well, I've used the word treasonous sometimes. It's not a good word to use publicly because it's strong, but it...
You can use it on my show, it's fine.
It really is the case. When you start transforming a democracy into an autocracy or, you know, just taking away the rights of the people to determine their own futures in all areas like health and education and and medicine and finance.
Right.
What is there left?
Right. Nothing.
And you're just left with a shell.
That's right.
Somebody else is running your country. And it's a step backward to the days of feudalism.
That's right. That's right.
That's what it is. And the new masters of our fate are a few ultra-rich people who don't give a darn about us and who have been and will even more in the future, treat us like serfs.
I have to tell you, Paul, that a couple of weeks ago when President Trump signed an executive order banning the TPP, which is the free trade agreement in our country here in the United States, the local newspapers out in the Seattle area, all they could do, the headlines saying Trump signs executive order banning the TPP, economists forecast loss of jobs in Washington state. Again, they're lying. Twisting.
Economists which?
Economists. They said unnamed economists say that Washington state's going to lose all kinds of jobs. Jobs are going to be lost because Trump came out against the TPP.
Well, it could even be the opposite.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. More likely to be the opposite because the TTP is just a little bit worse than CETA.
Okay.
And our country was all for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And would still like to go that route, I think.
Sure.
And there's some word that China may try to resurrect it and mm-hmm. Include people like us.
Well,
naive people who don't really know what's happening to them. Well, and it's just a tragedy. But, when the president said goodbye to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I mm-hmm. said, three cheers and a tiger.
Right. And that's one thing that brings up an important point, not only for you, Paul, but also for my program and all alternative media outlets out there who try to give people the other side of the coin. I think there's only 5 or 6 large corporations which control something like 90-95% of all mass media in the United States. Often they'll use the same reporters or the same television crews to focus on a particular story. The purpose of my program is not to issue propaganda, but seek the truth, whatever the truth may be.
Absolutely, and three cheers for you and other people like you.
Well, thank you, Paul. And one thing I like about you is that you're honest and you have a lot of integrity too, and you have a lot of experience as well. The one thing I like about your books is that they boil everything down to a very easily understandable arguments that people can use to help make society a better place and change our government policy so society does become a better place.
Well, it is possible, but we have to change our ways.
Right. Exactly. Well, we've got about 2.5 minutes left, Paul, and I'm saying that because in case if you just tuned in, this is Ted Marr with Out of This World Radio, broadcasting from Bellevue in Seattle in the United States. I have a wonderful gentleman on my show named Paul Hellyer, former Canadian Minister of Defense. He's written some wonderful books, including The Money Mafia. His website is www.paulhellyerweb.com. And with that, Paul, I want to give you the rest of the time. We've got about 2 minutes left to wrap up your wonderful interview today. And again, thank you so much for coming on my show today, Paul.
Well, my last 2 minutes is to say that the basic problem everywhere is spiritual.
Right. Wow.
You can have all the armed forces in the world,
mm-hmm.
but if the United States, like most of the Western world,
mm-hmm.
is morally and spiritually bankrupt,
right,
we're not going anywhere. We're
right.
going in the wrong direction.
I agree.
And I'm not saying that there aren't righteous people in the United States, because I know a lot of them, and a lot of them are my friends. They're the people that, you know, sure. cheer me on.
Sure, right.
But mm-hmm. they're... We've been disobeying rules. Jesus mm-hmm. said you can't serve God and mammon.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there's a whole chapter in Light at the End of the Tunnel which says that mammon has been ruling the world.
Mm-hmm.
That is certainly true since World War II.
Sure, right.
And we have to change our ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is that there are good things happening everywhere.
Right, that's true.
Hundreds of them, and we need more.
Right, I
so
agree.
My last book, The Money Mafia, has a section at the back citing some of the good things that are happening and saying what we need is a tsunami
mm-hmm.
of that kind of thinking and of dedicated people doing things for others instead
right.
of being totally concentrated on their own futures. And that if we did that, we wouldn't need a majority,
right.
but a substantial minority could change the world. We could actually have a world of peace and prosperity for everyone.
Well, I think I foresee that coming, Paul. I really do. And I want to thank you. I applaud you so much for your efforts because you're making a difference and you're making this world a much better and much happier place. Paul?
Well, thank you, and you too, and thank you for the opportunity of sharing some of my views tonight.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you so much for coming on today. And everyone, I hope you have an out-of-this-world weekend. Next week, I hope to have Lynn McTaggart on, and we'll do an intention experiment to help Fukushima. And have a beautiful weekend, everyone. Bye-bye.